This is Stan Collymore.
And you are listening to the V2 Football Podcast.
I'm your host, Anthony Kendrick, and joining me this week, I'm delighted to say, is Richard Hero-Hudson.
Good evening.
Are you well?
I'm very good. Better for the, obviously, horrific news what happened this week outside of football in Manchester, but a slight benefit of United then going on to win the Cup last night.
Mm-hmm. Well, we'll come on to the Cup in a bit, but yeah, I know it's obviously horrific what's happened in Manchester with the 22 deaths and that. Did see that United and City, because there's been the hashtag of City United, they've pledged £1 million between the two clubs, which is obviously fantastic, which is going towards the victims' families.
Yeah, a number of individual players as well have come forward with donations. I know Rooney's come forward with, I think, £100,000. Yaya Toure, I think, has also done the same.
They were the exact two which I had written down.
All right.
There's a lot of players who've come out and said they're going to donate, which is obviously fantastic. And I think generally the way that people have rallied around Manchester and that, it's a bit of an aside from a football podcast, but it's I think the reaction's been pretty terrific, to be honest.
Yeah, it's wonderful. And it's great to see sort of the two sides of Manchester, because Manchester is so embroiled in football, you know, one of the life and bloods of the city, to see rivals in every day then just coming together and uniting to hopefully sort of mend a few hearts, then that's great.
Yeah, no, I agree completely. So from there, I've got a few other quick stories I just want to mention before we go in. I saw on the last day of the season, Peter Crouch gave his shirt to a fan after he challenged him on Twitter. He said he'd give him his shirt if he turned up in his Speedos. And then following
he had a snorkel and goggles, didn't he, as well?
Yeah, Charlie Adams said, wear a snorkel and goggles as well. And the fan did. And Charlie Adams, even though he didn't play, gave him his shirt, and Peter Crouch gave him his match day shirt as well, so I'm sure that fan was, well, with the current weather as well, I'm sure it wasn't too bad.
No, I was down at Wembley on Sunday, and we were in the sun for all of the first half, and fortunately the sun sort of went over the stand for the second half, but we were absolutely roasting down there.
There's been a petition started against Michael Owen for his comments yesterday when he was working for BT Sport in the Europa League final. So he said during the game, we need another goal, when United were 1-0 up, referring to United as we, which has caused some Liverpool fans to take offence that he's called United we. And they've started a petition for him to be dropped from his ambassadorial role at Liverpool.
I think I disagree with that. I think any commentator, when an English team is playing in Europe, they always refer to them in the favourable side. They always want the English side to win. I don't think there's any harm in that. And they played for United, for pity's sake.
I agree, but okay, if, I don't know, Ryan Giggs said that about Liverpool, would you feel the same?
It wouldn't bother me. I think there's bigger things to worry about in the world.
Especially this week.
When these people need to have a good, quite strong look at themselves. I'd have to get Michael Owen removed from BT just because he falls the pants off me. Well, I wouldn't have taken offence to what he said.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree. I think, you know, most commentators do get behind their English side, I'm sure. I'm sure all the foreign commentators, the Spanish commentators and that, maybe. Well, maybe not Spain, actually, thinking about it with the Barcelona and Real Madrid. I don't know. But yeah.
It's like Gary Neville comments on a match. Obviously, he's in his playing career was one of the most biased players going. You know, he clearly wore the United badge of pride and despised Liverpool in games. But I think you know, he comes across when he's United is, you know, it's very neutral. He doesn't show any particular allegiance to United in that.
No, he doesn't, no. And obviously he's widely seen as probably the best, or one of the best pundits out there as well. But yeah, all right, well, we'll move on from that. We'll start with the Europa League, as we've touched on it already. Obviously, United beating Ajax in the final. The first thing I want to comment is, if you look at the run United had, you have to say it was a relatively easy run. And, you know, in the knockout rounds, playing Rostov, Anderlecht, Celta Vigo and Ajax, it's not like there's, you know, any of the big teams you normally get in the Europa League, which I think is a bit of a shame for me anyway, going to the games.
Yeah, you can only obviously beat what's in front of you. You know, there were better teams probably in the tournament that got knocked out along the way. There's like, you know, obviously, Lyon were in there, Roma were in there, Spurs.
Yeah.
But they didn't get through. You know, United played against the teams that came up against them, and you know, as you saw in the final, Mourinho got his tactics spot on.
Mm-hmm.
I know you're not, well, you weren't a fan. I don't know if you're starting to walk towards him. But you can't argue with three trophies come the end of his first season.
Well, this is what my next point was. I agree that, just sticking with the game first, I agree with you, the tactics were spot on, and Fellaini and Pogba in particular, you know, bullied them, and they didn't allow them to play their passing game. The tactics were spot on. It was a dull game of football which suited United, and yeah, tactics spot on, no complaints. And yeah, United won. But yeah, as we say, you know, three trophies, Community Shield, League Cup, now the Europa League. Not quite the treble, but you know, still a decent season. But well, this is the question though. Would you consider this season a good season because of the Premier League?
If they hadn't have won the Europa League, no, it would have been an awful season. And 90 minutes of football turned an awful season into, you know, a pretty good, I wouldn't say an amazing season.
Mm-hmm.
You know, United finishing sixth in the league is below what you would expect. You know, the inlay of cash that they put into the club, there's quality of players that are already there. But, you know, there's six very good teams in the Premier League at the moment. And on the, you know, next season, that top six could be in a completely different order again. And the good thing is that this season's now over. United are in the Champions League. It opens the team up to a higher calibre of players to come in. There's no excuses for players to say, oh, we want to go to a team in the Champions League, because they've got that now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's looking likely that Griezmann's, you know, on his way. There's rumours of other pretty big names coming in. So, you know, they could be certainly challenging for the top next year from that.
You see, I would make a counter-argument that for me, the Premier League is almost the bread and butter. The only league which I see as a priority is the Champions League. Obviously, we're in that. But for me, the Premier League is the main barometer, personally. And I'm a bit disappointed in the season because of that. Obviously, the Europa League was nice. Well, it was important to making it a good season, and the League Cup's obviously nice. But to me, the success is defined on a good Premier League season. Like, I want to see us competing and, you know, trying to win the Premier League, not the League Cup, personally. But
I'm sure they will be doing next season, but there's a lot more factors into play. And we mentioned it on the podcast last time round that you make your own luck in the Premier League, but there's, you know, Chelsea this year, I can't recall them particularly having many injuries at all to their squad. They pretty much went the entire season with a usual first 11 going into games. And you look at their main rivals, which, you know, should have been probably United and City, and at times they were both decimated by injuries.
Mm-hmm. No, that's definitely true, and the fact they didn't have to play in Europe or anything certainly helped them. I'm not going to, argue with that. But it's funny to think at the start of the season, you know, we were all saying about this City versus United battle it was going to be to the title, and yet, you know, in the end, they finished third and sixth.
Yeah, I'm sure both City and United will look back on their league campaigns. You know, and City finished the season. You know, Guardiola pretty much, I think, has, before this season, has won a trophy every single year.
Yeah.
This season, not won a single trophy. You know, he's had a rude awakening to the Premier League. He'll be looking to improve next season, and I'm sure they will.
Mm-hmm.
I'd go for next season that he'd been a a three-way fight for the title.
What, between United, City and Chelsea?
Yeah. So I think Arsenal will continue to drop away, even with either sticking with Wenger or trying to bring in a new one. I think they'll have the after Ferguson factor that United had. The Spurs will have the issue of having all the home games at Wembley, and I don't think Liverpool have either the calibre to bring in the top level of players to take them on to the next level. All the squad at the moment is good enough.
Yeah, well, I'll come on to Arsenal and Wenger in a minute, but with Spurs, I know Jermaine Genius did a thing for the BBC. He was saying about the pitch size at Wembley being bigger because Tottenham have they have the smallest pitch permissible by the Premier League rules. It's right at the bottom end of the specification, and because of that, that's really helped them in their style of play, and that's why, or at least part of the reason why, their home form is so good. And yeah, playing at Wembley will be a big challenge for them. I agree. I'm not sure. We'll see. I think we'll see them fall away a bit. But then I don't think anyone predicted Tottenham to finish second this season. So,
and the thing is, as well with Wembley, is that when the fans are up for a game at Wembley, at the weekend, it was a fantastic atmosphere. All four sets of fans from non-league clubs are absolutely cheering the heart out. But there was only 38,000 there for that game, which is still a fair amount for non-league. But Spurs go there, and if you're not playing well, the Spurs aren't going to fill that stadium. And then it becomes a very empty stadium for such a capacity.
Mm-hmm.
And you need... White Hart Lane was one of the stadiums that I think had the best atmospheres in the league. So then go to a stadium where if you're not, you're not filling it, and you're not... the fans are starting to get a bit on your back. With such a pitch size, you're going to start feeling a bit lost there.
Well, we've got a good case study, actually, in that. Because if you look at West Ham, with Upton Park, you could make a similar point. That had that fantastic... that was known for its fantastic atmosphere. And, at the start of the season, they struggled at the Olympic Stadium. It picked up a bit towards the end. But, they really struggled to adapt to that new surrounding. And I know Slaven Bilic was... He said that it takes time to adapt, seeing the passes and that. He said it's you'd be surprised how much the players, see things differently because their surroundings are different.
Well, they certainly had a feisty atmosphere at the beginning of the season at West Ham's new ground.
Yeah.
But yeah, it takes a long while to get used to a new stadium, I think. Especially for Wembley, that is a huge pitch there.
Yeah.
You do have to adapt your style to play on it.
Mm-hmm. All right, well, from there, I want to talk about England a bit, with the main news being on Wayne Rooney. Obviously, he's not in this squad. So Gareth Southgate has said that it's nothing personal against Rooney, it's just that other players are in really good form and deserve their place more. Well, firstly, do you agree? Because personally, I cannot make a case for Wayne Rooney being in the England squad.
No. The only thing I would possibly be looking at with Rooney is that although perhaps his playing days are very much coming to an end, he's meant to be a particularly good figure to have in the dressing room.
Mm-hmm.
He's one that will... he's become the veteran of the dressing room. He's a shoulder for players to talk to. He's good with the advice for the younger players coming through. He's been there and he's seen it all. Perhaps bring him in an early coaching role in the England setup.
Mm-hmm.
Like how the likes of Gary Neville were quite fast tracked before in the England setup. Do something similar with Rooney, because to have him in the dressing room with all these younger players, I think would only benefit them.
Mm-hmm. Well, Rooney, the player as well, in terms of clubs, he's said he's more or less decided what he's going to do. And he spoke about the last, year or 18 months at United and how he's not been first choice, but he's been there when called upon and he's happy to have that role. But he said now he's got that choice whether he wants to continue in that kind of role at United or get first team football, be it at Everton, be it in the US or China or somewhere like that. What do you see his future being? Do you think he's got to leave United, or
if he wants first team football, he has to. His days at United getting a game are obviously numbered now. The fact that three quarters of the way through the season, United had three strikers, and that the main striker was in, went off injured for the rest of the season in Ibra. And after that, Rooney played how many games? Yeah, he got an occasional starting role, but pretty much the responsibility went to a 19-year-old.
Mm-hmm.
So, and people go on about Mourinho not giving kids a chance. Well, he had a choice there, playing somebody that's the top scorer of the club and country, or a 19-year-old kid, and he went with a 19-year-old kid.
Mm-hmm. That's true. But, so, look,
but if I was Rooney, I'd be going to Everton. I would be looking at China. He's northwest. I don't think he'd want to upstick and move his family away from here.
He said the only Premier League club he would play for is Everton. He wouldn't play for any other Premier League club. So it's either Everton or abroad from the looks of things.
Yeah, and I think over the years as well, I know a few Everton fans, but for years they absolutely despised him for moving over to United, the whole like kiss the badge and such. But I think time's healed, and I think Everton fans would welcome him back now.
But then that's the other question with Rooney. How much has he, obviously he's not at his peak, he's regressed a bit, but how far has he, would he get into that Everton first team anymore?
Yeah, I think his role would have to have, his roles have changed over the years. He's not lost half a yard, he's lost about 4 yards.
Mm-hmm. But you
move him further back, you have, you know, you build the team around him and have him in the role of puppet master for the team.
But
Barkley's going to be gone.
But sorry, if he were to move to Everton, you'd be confident he'd get a first team spot.
I'd still put him in the Everton team.
Because I struggle to see him in that, to be honest with you.
I think in a deeper role, he'd certainly be able to be getting a first team place. I certainly wouldn't be putting him up front anymore, but
no.
In a centre midfield or even just slightly ahead, not a number 10 role, but in a free man as the spearhead of the free man midfield, then he could do a job.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and sticking with the England squad being announced, well, there's two games coming up. We've got obviously the competitive game against Scotland and then a friendly against France. But to be honest, do you think, like, do you care about these games at the end of the season?
Do the players?
Well, I don't know. I don't. To be honest, until I saw the squad announced today, I didn't know there were England games coming up.
I imagine they'll put an effort into the game v Scotland, and they've pretty much wrapped up the World Cup qualification already, haven't they, really, England? But they'll be already be on holiday by the time they play France.
Yeah. I think this is the problem, though, because, you know, on paper you think England v France, it's a good friendly. You know, from the point of view of the organisers, they've got a good friendly, and we've had good friendly games against, you know, like Germany and Brazil and, you know, big nations over the years. And on paper, you think, you know, we've played all the big teams, this is great. But I don't know, like, I'm not excited about this, but I don't know what else the organisers of these friendlies can do.
It's a tricky one. Like, I've mooted before an idea that all World Cup qualifiers should be in a window. Either like the middle of the season when they and have a winter break, or internationals could be played, or at the end of the season.
Mm.
But you know, so many players are already preparing for the 2 weeks in Barbados now. You know, the heads have already gone.
Yeah.
You know, got harping on again about being down at Wembley at the weekend, but you can see there with Macclesfield players at Wembley that, you know, several of them already knew that they were probably. Yeah, they were going to be leaving at the end of the season. Several of them had already been away for a fortnight because the back season had finished.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's hard to pick yourself up for a game when your season's over.
Yeah, it's this argument of club v country and pride of playing for your country and, you know, whether English players have it and all that, which we've obviously discussed so many times on here before. Moving on from that, I want to talk about a few managers from the lower end of the league. I'll start with Sam Allardyce, who's left his role at Crystal Palace. Club were in the relegation zone when he took over, and he got them up to 14th. He's avoided relegation yet again. He said he wants to do other things, and he's not bothered about management. He's got no interest in other jobs. Do you think we'll see him in management anyway at some point when a team's in trouble?
I imagine that somebody offers him enough cash at some point, he'll be
not at all. But I mean, you know, the fact he's left Palace, is it like he can't be bothered with this sort of long-term project, which you'd expect it should be from here for whoever takes over?
Yeah, I imagine he's had a certain stipulation for staying on, and because those stipulations weren't being met, he just thought, call it a day.
What sort of stipulation do you mean, like budget or something?
Yeah, the, you know, players like Zaha were not to be sold, a certain amount of money was going to be available for him to spend. And, you know, say he sat down through his chat with the chairman about targets and things for next season. If they're not then coming forward with him, he probably thought, I'll call it a day.
Yeah. All right. And also, David Moyes has left Sunderland. Sunderland finished, obviously, bottom of the table, a dreadful season, but he's left with, he's not received any compensation. He's chosen that. And, yeah, there's talk he might go over to China.
Lucky then. we talked about this on the podcast last week, and for me, the whole thing was summed up with David Moyes in the first week of the season came out in a post-match interview and basically just said, we're in for a relegation battle this year. And as soon as Paul Clement took over Swansea, he said, our team shouldn't be in the relegation battle. Our team are better than they think they are, and we should be getting out of this relegation. Swansea got out of relegation, Sunderland stayed in relegation all season. That's down to the managers basically telling their players, you know, one manager tells them that their players aren't worth it being in the Premier League, and one says, you know, you should be in the Premier League.
Mm-hmm. So, with Sunderland as well, I think David Moyes leaving is very good for them, because I don't think he's the man to take them out of the Championship. I don't think he's that guy. They need to bring in someone like Gary Monk's left Leeds today. Someone like him would be a great fit, I think. I think they need somebody, you know, fresh, and the squad needs to be refreshed if they want to. Otherwise, they're going to be stuck in the Championship, is my view.
You just need somebody that's positive.
Mm.
Yeah, you look back again to last season with Claudio Ranieri at Leicester. They didn't win the title because they were the best individuals in the league. They won the title because their morale, straight away from when the season started, was at such a high, and their team spirit between them was at such a high, that they just went into the games with self-belief.
Mm-hmm.
And Moyes is a manager that saps self-belief out of players. He makes a good player bad.
He obviously had a good time at Everton, Moyes. Do you think the Man United job has just killed his career, or do you think he can revive it, talking about him personally?
I think it's a hard slog for him now. You know, every club that he's been at now since Everton, he's done appalling.
I just want to talk about Marco Silva, who has left Hull with him, and there's talk he might be going to Porto. Chairman's come out and said that he, you know, he accepts that Marco Silva is a better manager than a championship level.
The whole fans absolutely loved him.
Yeah,
I know they got relegated at the end of the season, but I don't think a bad word was said about him. He looks like he could be a very good manager. In Portugal, it's generally one of Porto or Benfica that wins the title, so he's got a good chance there. Occasionally, Sporting Lisbon have a bit of a sniff as well. But the Porto, over the years, have been a strong side. They're perhaps not as strong as they have been in recent years, obviously when Mourinho was there. But they've always had such good scouts for bringing across South Americans to the side. So I'm sure that Porto's resurgence will start again under him.
I think he did a fantastic job at Hull the second half of this season. You know, he couldn't have done much more. But I saw an interesting debate on the forum, actually, on the BT forum, whereby, you know, they were saying what would be better for his career, going somewhere like Porto or taking a job like Crystal Palace, you know, because in the Premier League, you obviously get, you know, more exposure and that to get to the bigger roles because, you know, if he's ambitious and wants, say, a top six Premier League side or someone like that. You know, which do you think would be better for his career?
I would say actually going over to put somewhere like Porto, getting a Champions League experience. It's not often that you know, you got Pochettino, those Spurs that sort of came from a perhaps considered a lowered team in the league, and obviously you have Moyes that was given that chance at United. But most big clubs tend to go for a manager that's, you know, done well in Europe, at a bigger club in Europe. They don't tend to look lower down the Premier League.
For the season, I saw Antonio Conte's won the LMA Manager of the Season, but I think there's a couple of honourable mentions in, you know, Sean Dyche at Burnley, who's done a fantastic job, and Eddie Howe, who, you know, Bournemouth finishing ninth, you know, incredible achievement, I think. And, you know, I hope those two get a chance at bigger clubs myself.
Yeah, I think Conte deserved it. Obviously, the number of points Chelsea got, the number of wins that they got in the league. But there's several others that finished the season with their heads held high. Mm-hmm. Now, the Spurs manager, how many points did Spurs end up? Was it 86? And they had a plus 40 goal difference.
It's plus 60. Scored 86, conceded 20. They scored the most goals in 86 and conceded the fewest in 26.
Right. So, in pretty much any other season, that's winning the title.
Yeah.
Now, that's an amazing season. And they were so unfortunate not to win the title. Just another club this season just ran away with it. But yeah, Eddie Howe did a fantastic job at Bournemouth. And to give a shout out to Tony Pulis as well. Now, beginning of the season, West Brom fans pretty much thought that they were going to be going down, that nobody liked his style of play. But he kept them up. I think they were pretty much staying up by Christmas.
Yeah. Well, they didn't win any games towards the end of the season. I don't think they won a single game in April or May. But then,
no,
you know,
they did. They were safe, and they went on holiday.
So. No, they tailed off. But what I'm saying is, had they not, they could have, you know, finished like seventh or something, which is, you know, the highest anyone's going to finish, really. You know, because the top six will finish the top six.
Yeah.
So yeah, no, Tony Pulis deserves a shout out. Actually, he's had a great season. But yeah, for me, there's no complaints with Conte. I don't think. You can look past him. He's, you know, been flawless as a, you know, Chelsea have been flawless.
And I think he's one of those managers that everybody just loves to see.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, you see him on the touchline. Mourinho perhaps doesn't love to see him, but you know, as an away fan, you hate the rival manager, but at the same time with Conte, you're just mesmerised by him.
Yeah, a bit like Klopp as well at Liverpool. You know, they're just such likeable characters.
Yeah. I hope that he's not tempted by the Inter job, and he stays around in the Premier League for a while.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, move on. Talk about the FA Cup final, which is this Saturday. Obviously, Chelsea versus Arsenal. It could potentially be Arsene Wenger's last game as Arsenal boss. He said he doesn't know himself, and his future will be decided after the game. But yeah, it'd be sad if it is the end for him.
It would. There's so many Arsenal fans that are against him now that it is a real shame. It's one of them where it's sort of like when parents sort of stay together too long and they should have got divorced years ago, and it's all got a bit bitter.
He spoke with such passion after the final game of the Premier League season, saying about how no one can question how much he loves the club and that he's turned down basically every big club in the world to stay at Arsenal and, you know, get on with this project. And I hope Arsenal do win the FA Cup final, so if he does leave, he can leave on, he's got that opportunity to leave on a high.
Yeah. So, Arsenal fans are, like people say it's about Man United fans being deluded, but Arsenal fans have got to be up there as some of the most deluded in the country. What do they expect every year with their club? Yeah, you've got Chelsea, Man United, Man City, all spending every year a lot more money than Arsenal do.
Mm-hmm.
You look at Arsenal over the last 10 years, they've only really gone out and bought two big names in 10 years. And some will blame that on Wenger, but you know, a lot of the time his hands have been tied with the move to the Emirates Stadium and the board. If he's not given the money and the other side are going out and spending three or four times more than him every year to still consistently finish in the top four. I know they've gone fifth this year, but what was it, 20? they have. He's done exceptional. And if they think that, you know, Wenger should have been challenging for the title year in, year out, when he's operating on a much less of a budget, then they're just delusional.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's some talk out there he might end up going to Barcelona, which would be, you know, an interesting appointment.
The one I'd love him to go to is Bayern Munich, and the next time that they play in the Champions League, he's stopped all over Arsenal again.
Oh, he'd be crying, I think. He'd be distraught.
Piers Morgan would have a heart attack on Twitter.
And no one wants to see that, do they?
No,
tears
to Piers.
So, talking about this final specifically, what do you think, Chelsea or Arsenal to win the FA Cup?
I really can't see past Chelsea. Mm-hmm. I'd like Arsenal to win, but you look at those two sides and Sanchez apart, you'd put 10 Chelsea players in Sanchez.
Yeah, and the fact they've got a couple of defenders out as well, Koscielny for that red card. I think Gabriel's out as well, isn't he?
Yeah.
So, yeah, they're going to struggle. I'd be shocked if Arsenal win it, but yeah, again, like you, I would like to see them.
Going back to the semi-final, I think pretty much everybody thought City would walk over Arsenal in that game, and yeah, you never know, Wembley is a fickle beast.
Alright, and just to finish, I just want to mention, I've made my own team of the season because it annoys me a bit sometimes when you read these teams, you know, Garth Crooks or whoever else does these teams. It really annoys me that they're unbalanced and you've got loads of attacking midfielders in. And it's not, I don't know if it annoys you or not, but it's a real pet hate of mine.
I've seen some of the teams you've put forward over the years, so I'm looking forward to this then.
Okay, so I'll give you my team. Sorry?
Has it got top level in it?
So, my team, Jordan Pickford's in goal. I've put defence, Antonio Valencia, Michael Keane, Toby Alderweireld, Cesar Azpilicueta, midfield, N'Golo Kante and Tom Cleverley. No, that's a joke. Midfield midfield is N'Golo Kante and Oriol Romeu. Attacking mid, I've got De Bruyne on the right, Dele Alli and Eden Hazard left wing, and then Harry Kane up front.
Can't argue with most. Romeo's had a good season for Southampton, but I probably want to put him in there.
Okay.
Sanchez certainly needed to be in the team of the year.
But then you'd make the team to attack him. I was trying to make a balanced team because it annoys me. I agree with you. Sanchez has been in the best 11 players, but in order to build a team, I don't think it works for me.
Who else were you attacking?
I put De Bruyne, Ali and Hazard behind Kane.
I put Sanchez in instead of one of them.
Okay, which one?
Push Ali. Between De Bruyne and Ali is very, very hard. I think Ali's had an exceptional season, but and a lot of people think De Bruyne hasn't had an amazing season, but not as great as the one beforehand. But I think he's still up there as most.
He's got 18 assists more than anyone in the
Yeah, it's hard to argue with that. No. I think Ali has done it. He's probably the best young player in the Premier League this year. But I think Eriksen doesn't get the credit he deserves for what he does to the Spurs team.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'd be very interested to hear some other teams of the season if you want to tweet into us or on the forum as well. Then I know the debate goes on there as well. But yeah.
I'd be pushing for to put in the team is actually the guy that was player of the match last night in Herrera's
had a great season as well. No, I agree. Instead of Romeo, I nearly put Idrissa Gueye in myself as well.
Yeah, very good season as well. Can't argue with that one.
But yeah, I know we've got quite a few Southampton listeners, so I thought I'd appeal to them.
Yeah, well, they do seem to love Romeo.
Rightly so, after this season, I think. But yeah, it's a shame Shane's not here so we can hear even more about Romeo.
With Kane, though, just going back to him, and I know, obviously, he got Golden Boot. But did you see the stat about how he got the Golden Boot?
No, what? Please tell.
It was something like that pretty much half his goals came in 4 or 5 games.
He scored loads in the last 2 games, didn't he?
Yeah, he he's got 7 in the last 2, but there was some games in which he was just absolutely on fire, and then he just hit, you know, middle of the road for the rest of it.
I was just going to say, it reminds me of Berbatov when he won, or a joint won it with Carlos Tevez, but I know I think he scored 5 hat-tricks, and he scored 5 goals against Blackburn in that season. He didn't actually score in that many games, but because he had those games where he scored so many, he ended up joint winning the Golden Boot.
Yeah, it was very hard call. We said about Spurs, Demon Oates, and Ali, I'd put perhaps Lukaku in there over Kane. I mean, Lukaku did a lot more for Everton than Kane did for Spurs.
Yeah, no, I take that point. I think Lukaku, you know, without Lukaku, Spurs wouldn't have finished them. Spurs would be nowhere without him. But yeah, there's also the point you could raise about Harry Kane having the injury as well, so he didn't play as many minutes over the season. I think we've reached the end of the show, unless there's anything else you want to mention or anything?
No, I'm good.
All right, well, thanks for listening. We've got the 72 show. We'll be back next week after the playoff finals over the weekend. We'll be discussing that and the Leeds takeover and Gary Monk and many other things. We've got the V2 Academy, which Chris Lappin is releasing the second season of over the summer. You can check out our website, v2football.com, and follow us on Twitter at v2football. It's good night from me, and good night from Richard here in Hudson. Good night.
Good night.